Hello and welcome to the Disney Magic Hour, episode number 41. On this week's show, we review 1951's Alice in Wonderland for our Disney Movie Hour. To my left, as always, is Brian. Say hello, Brian.
Hello, Brian.
Across from me is Melissa. Say hello, Melissa.
Hello, Melissa.
And to my right is Scott. Say hello, Scott.
Hello, Scott.
Hello, Pete. And say hello, Poco. Finally, I got to use that song for the perfect reason. That was Alice. You can find that video and more over at youtube.com/pogo, his music at soundcloud.com/pogomix, and his website is pogomix.net. He actually just released an Eminem song, like as in the candies, and it's really, really cool. I would go check that out. He even did some re-recording of some audio with Billy West.
Ooh,
yeah, nice. So that was really, really cool. Who are we, though? We are Last Gen Podcast. Find us on the web at lastgenpodcast.com. Find us on Twitter for this show at DIS Magic Hour Pod. On Facebook, if you search for Disney Magic Hour, you can find our group, add you to it. And if you head on over to iTunes and you give a 5-star review, as numerous of you once again did, thank you so much. We'll be reading those at the end of the show. And if you head on over to Google Play Music, if you light 3 candles and burn a doll, you'll maybe find the podcast section. And then in there, search for Disney Magic Hour. You can also find us at soundcloud.com/Disney Magic Hour Podcast.
A lot of links now.
Yes, this list is getting longer and longer. The fog is getting thicker. And Leon's getting larger. All right. We have a little special announcement that actually, this is normally something I would only do for Film Basement, but I figure, you know, we have people who listen on this show as well. A lot of you, actually. We are holding a film screening in Patchogue on Long Island. It is going to be for the movie The Final Girls, which we had the director, Todd Strauss Schulson, on the show about a month and a half ago or so about this point.
Yeah, yeah.
And we were talking after the show, and we really wanted to have a screening of this film because it didn't get a wide release in the theaters because it's insanely expensive. But ever since then, it's been growing this cult following, and we thought it'd be really fun to have a night where we basically get to show it to people who want to see it up on the big screen, which actually includes us because none of us have ever seen it on the big screen. So on Thursday, May 19th, starting at 7:45, we have an entire night planned out for everybody. There's going to be an 80s horror trivia going on before the movie starts with some free giveaways. Free giveaways. Then we're going to have the screening of the film. And then we're going to have a Q&A live via Skype with the director, Todd Strauss Schulson. And the tickets are only $5 each. Where can you get these tickets, you ask?
Where can you get these tickets?
You can get these tickets at plazamac.org. That is plazamac.org /the-final-girls. I'll have the link in the show notes. We've already sold over half the tickets in only about 3 days since they went live, and we have 2 weeks left to the night. Wait, what day is this?
Today is Wednesday the 4th.
May the 4th be with you.
So we have
2 weeks from tomorrow.
2 weeks from tomorrow.
So, but you'll be hearing this on Thursday. Yeah. So yeah.
Revenge of the 5th.
And yes, Revenge of the 5th and everything else that you can make a hashtag out of.
There are pins in downtown, in Disney Springs.
You're a pin. You're a towel. Anyways. Did you have something you wanted to say while I was trying to read off everything else? You raised your hand.
No.
No? Are you sure?
If I did, I forgot.
Maybe if you're stretching.
No, right.
I'm just trying to distract you.
Well, we had this is a big week this week for me in particular. Alice in Wonderland is one of my favorite films. I think it's insane.
That's putting it lightly.
Yeah. We're going to go into a little bit of detail on the background. There's so much background on this. I kind of like went nuts with notes.
Yes.
But I'm just going to read you some of it. In particular, we have a lot about Lewis Carroll himself, who, of course, wrote the book initially back in 1860s. And his original name was Charles Lutwidge Dodgson, which is so British, it's amazing. Mm. Things that I learned, most of this, we learned some of this stuff from the net, some of this stuff from other places, some of this stuff from the Alice in Wonderland Blu-ray, which had a Backstage Magic feature on it. And basically, the tale of Alice starts when he was staying at the Christ Church in Oxford, and the dean there, his name was Dean Little, had four children, one of them named Alice. And one day, actually, they have the specific day, which was July 4th, 1862. That July 4th means nothing in England, by the way, just in case you're wondering. They were in a rowboat, and the children asked Carol to tell them a story. And that's where it started. He just made it up as he went along. And then after a couple of different, you know, entries, basically, into the story that he was just saying orally, they're like, you got to write this stuff down. Actually, Alice herself said, you got to write this stuff down for me. And he wrote it out into a manuscript, which was all hand-drawn also with some animations. But the crazy thing is that we know all of this because he used to just keep like a registered amount of letters. And there are over 98,000 of them.
My goodness.
And that's how you're able to get the details for like the exact date of when this happened and all that kind of crazy stuff. So that is really kind of where the whole Alice in Wonderland book started, was way back then. And then when Walt was a young boy, this isn't ever confirmed, but there was a silent version of the film that came out in 1910 that you can make a safe assumption a boy of Walt's age, which then he would have been 9 years old, probably went to go see.
Yeah.
With what we know of how he used to go to the theater as a kid and everything, it's kind of a safe assumption that that was there and that he had read the book at one point. Then later in the 20s, of course, Walt started with the Alice in Cartoon Land, combining live action and animation, and that was his big first commercial success. They wound up making 57 of those.
Wow. Yeah,
but I think one of them is totally lost because I saw 57 on a couple of lists, but I heard 56 referenced in a couple of documentaries. So I feel like one of them is just totally lost, and I don't know if anyone's ever really seen it recently at all. Now, the road to Alice being made was long because he had it going on in the 20s. In 33, he was going to make a version of his own, but Paramount announced their own live-action version of Alice, and he put it away. Then in 36, if you remember the Mickey Mouse cartoon Through the Mirror, that is very, very heavily borrowed from the imagery of Alice in Wonderland and Through the Looking Glass, of course. Then in 38, Walt registered the title of Alice in Wonderland for a feature film, and that would have been animated. Melissa?
No, I actually had this jotted down also, and the initial story for this particular version, after he registered it, was the initial story was by Al Perkins, and concept art was by David S. Hall, but he wasn't particularly thrilled with them, and with the funds from World War II kind of depleting things, he kind of scrapped it.
Yeah, one of the big factors was that the illustrations were very close to Tenniel's illustrations, which to animate them in a storyboard form, in a real form, would have been very difficult, very expensive, and very dark.
Yeah, because Tenniel was a political cartoonist for magazines and like newspapers in London, so he did the kind of crosshatch kind of animation or illustrations that you would find in a periodical. So to do that for an entire film would be way too
time-consuming. Yeah. Apparently. So yeah, once again, it was delayed. There was even a version that Walt was going to do with Ginger Rogers at one point.
Yeah, then he wanted to do like a mix of a live action and
animation. To go back to the 20s and basically make an updated version. Yep. Really, it's so funny because a lot of people will say that Mary Poppins is like his crowning achievement. And it seemed like since the 20s, he was trying to do that.
Yeah.
You know, it just took 40 years. But, you know, it seemed like that was always the thing that he was aiming for. So Alice comes out. Just a couple of little notes. It features 14 songs. But when you think of classical Disney music stuff, I don't know if I think of Alice right away, even though I'm a huge Alice fan.
No, there's no songs I think most people could just pick out and
I think
and
there's get a couple.
I think there's a couple, but not 14.
That's a
huge number.
Because also I was thinking, like, after we heard the 14 number, I was like, yeah, but like some of those are like, you know, a minute,
if that. There's like three lines of dialogue. Like the Dodo, you know, actually has two songs and he's only in the movie, you know, taking out the whole house burning part, which we'll get there. It was nominated for Best Score, but it lost to American in Paris, correct?
Yes.
Yes.
And then, of course, this introduced us to Catherine Beaumont as Alice, and she would go on to be Wendy later on. And a lot of returning people. Sterling Holloway is the Cheshire Cat, which is animated by Ward Kimball. And he also did the animation on Tweedledee and Tweedledum, The Walrus and the Carpenter, and The Tea Party. And Ed Wynn is here as the Mad Hatter, which whenever we eventually get to Wreck-It Ralph, mm-hmm. Alan Tudyk basically does an entire homage to, you know, Ed Wynn as the Mad Hatter.
And even how they animate King Candy, it's very...
he even looks the same. Yeah, he has a lot of the same. Jerry Colonna is the March Hare. And I you know, I'm going to put up links to this. I'll find it and I'll put it in the show notes. There's the great live action footage that they shot of these, you know, of everybody, but in particular of the Mad Tea Party scene.
Yeah.
And you get to see Edwin and Jerry Colonna actually doing the movements like when the watch is being destroyed.
Yeah.
And it's just absolutely fantastic. And we have a really great turn here by somebody that we just spoke about recently, was Verna Felton, showing her insane range going from the Fairy Godmother to the Queen of Hearts here.
Yeah.
That's kind of what I had. I mean, I have some other stuff that'll probably just come up as we're going along.
Well, we have J. Pat O'Malley, who we remember as the Earl of the Horse. He did Tweedledee and Tweedledum and The Walrus and the Carpenter. I did find...
Oh, I forgot to say the premiere and whatnot.
What do you mean?
Because we were kind of building up to it, I guess.
Oh, well, I was just going to say the cards. I know those voices were ones that mentioned.
We'll see. Yeah, we'll say that at the end, actually, because okay. I thought that was really cool. We'll say that when that comes up.
Okay.
So Alice debuts on July 26, 1951, actually overseas. In the U.S., it debuts on the 28th. It only clocks in at 75 minutes long, so we have another kind of short animated film. $3 million budget. It did not bring that in upon initial release. It wasn't until the 74 release and the 81 release that it made to about $7 million, mm-hmm. which inflated is a different, it's a weird number, and it's like $300 million or some crazy number, but that doesn't count the way that counts.
You're crazy.
And really what edged on like the reemergence of this film was the drug culture.
Yeah, mm-hmm. The psychedelic.
Yeah, White Rabbit by Jefferson Airplane, of course, was a huge thing. And actually, if you listen to the new trailer for Alice Through the Looking Glass, there's another version of White Rabbit being done. It's sung by Pink. She actually does a pretty good job in the trailer for what we know. So let's get into this movie, which is 75 minutes of insanity. And there's a lot to go through, but I'm very curious of how everyone's reaction to this was. So we open up and we basically have the misspelled name of Lewis Carroll.
Yeah.
It's fixed now. Mm. But upon initial release, Lewis Carroll's name was actually spelled wrong in the opening credits. Only had one L.
Yeah.
And it was supposed to have two. The opening art, I thought, was closer to what the Tenniel drawings were.
Yeah. And I liked, like, this was our first opening where you had introduction of the characters, like, before you even knew the movie, because you had all the little sketch animations, you know. And I liked this a lot better than some of the older, like, the Snow White or Cinderella, where it was just, like, names on colored backgrounds.
Well, do you think that has anything to do with the fact of how popular Alice in Wonderland already is? Like, how people... You probably know something about Alice in Wonderland right away, but if you sat me way back when in front of the theater and said, this is Sleeping Beauty, I wouldn't know who the fairies are.
Maybe, but also like, because it was so changed. Like, Alice was so true to the book, whereas the other fairy tales that he did were changed. Like, for instance, in Sleeping Beauty, there was like 7 or 8 fairies. There wasn't 3.
That would have been silly.
Yeah. So, I mean... Maybe because the characters were so well known, they were able to do that initially.
I think so, yeah. Because, I mean, it is similar to the book, but there's a lot of changes. Yeah. Because the book is, if you've ever read the book, it's a crazy book to read because it's largely plotless and it's just a lot of wordplay and jokes and, you know, jokes that you have to think about.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, even reading it can be difficult in some spots when you're reading certain poems. The Jabberwocky poem in particular is almost... It's just tough to read.
Yeah.
So.
They're all nonsense words.
But Brian and Scott, I mean, when was the last time you saw Alice in Wonderland previous to like doing it for this show, Scott?
When I was a kid, probably.
Oh, really?
Maybe,
that long?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Mm-hmm. That's been, I'd say, about like maybe 5-6 years since I've
seen
it.
Wow, that's even longer than I thought it would be.
Yeah, yeah. It has been quite a while. Well, maybe, basically, I think when it came out on Blu-ray is probably the last time I watched it.
I mean, I owned it, but I'm not sure when the initial release was, because then I think it got a re-release.
When I picked it up on Blu-ray would be the last time that I've watched it.
Okay.
Yeah.
So we get basically, you know, our little opening. Alice's speech, of what would be and what wouldn't be, that's very like the book.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Like, that is the type of stuff that you would get pages upon pages of while reading the book. So I like that opening with her talking to the cat and whatnot. Mm-hmm. And I think we get, see, in my opinion, this is one of the best Disney songs of all time, is In a World of My Own.
Cats and rabbits would reside in fancy little houses and be dressed in shoes and hats and trousers in a world of my own. All the flowers.
I swear this woman who was trying to teach her the history lesson was her mother. Like, growing up, that was her mother. When we were looking up, when I was looking up the cast list and it said her sister, I was like, where's her sister come in? But apparently that's her sister.
It's her sister. Yeah, you know, people just have older siblings. It happens.
Looks like a mother. It's also voiced by the same woman who voiced Mrs. Darling, Heather Angel. So she already has that older woman voice in my head.
I could see that. I'm trying to remember the first time I saw it. I don't even know if like my brain was like, who is this woman? I just thought she was, I probably just thought she was a teacher.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
I probably would have just made the assumption that she was like a teacher of Alice's.
Or like her nanny or something like that.
So, actually, while watching the In the World of My Own animation, it kind of reminded me of Belle. When she does the reprise and she's running through the field, that kind of reminded me of it, like her in the flowers and all that kind of stuff. I don't know if that's supposed to be, if that was an inspiration later for it. Maybe. But it looks like Beauty and the Beast just looked at a lot of 50s Disney animation and was like, we got it.
We like this.
Well, that's actually really like a funny thing, because for Belle, she made fun of Gaston, or like poo-pooed Gaston, because he was like, how can you read without all these pictures? And here Alice is like, I can't pay attention to a book, it hasn't any pictures in it.
Yeah, so Alice is the perfect mate for Gaston.
Alice is illiterate, is basically what we found out early on.
She no can read.
I was like, is that a play on like dumb girls? But I figured it's just because she's, you know, imaginative.
She's a child.
She's imaginative.
Also because she's a young kid.
No, I know.
I think that has a lot to do with it. So we get the White Rabbit shows up. This is, of course, voiced by Bill Thompson, who you would recognize as Smee in Peter Pan. And he's also the Dodo later on in the film.
I did think it was interesting that if not for the cat, Alice probably wouldn't have noticed the White Rabbit and it would have been all fine.
Why not?
Because the cat was the one that was like pawing at Alice and being like, look, this thing is running by.
Yeah, in this version, yes. The cat in this version, that is
that. And
is
that cat was super cute.
Adorable.
That was a really cute cat.
They didn't kill this cat, so that's a change.
No, that's good.
Change from the last film.
Yeah.
They do not murder this cat by throwing it out of a window.
Well, I guess like based on cuteness, because in Pinocchio...
Pinocchio! Yes?
The cat was not killed either, and he was adorable also. Figaro.
Oh, yeah.
Were you mimicking Pinocchio with your arms?
Like,
what was that?
Like
weighing
the
scales of justice as to whether or not to murder a feline? What were you doing just on...
No, like the ratio of cuteness to getting killed or
it's
not.
It's just funny because you got the cast on one hand, so it's like...
I thought we were busting out into a robot dance.
I mean, it is the 32nd anniversary of Breakin' being released in the theaters today, so...
Is it 32nd? Is that like a number that we celebrate?
No, but it's just...
Fine.
It's just
apparently
great.
It's been 32 years since that movie's been
out. Alice goes through the rabbit hole, and I would say this is a first nomination for iconic shot. In particular, if you want to freeze frame it, when Alice is falling down the well and she leans over to turn on the lamp, that would be my thing. You know, oh my God, we totally forgot to say that in the beginning.
What?
Our rules. What do we talk about on this show in particular?
We have no rules.
Yes, we do, actually. We have three. Not three. We have three questions, not rules. What are the three questions? Now you got to say them.
Good, because I get them correct.
Pull yourself together.
All right. We have, does the film still hold up?
Okay.
We have, what's the iconic shot?
Mm-hmm.
And is it a moral film or is it an emotional film?
Or none of the above. Could also be one of those.
Is it a drug-fueled joyride?
No, this one definitely has a...
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
All right. We'll get to that later.
Can I just go back to the... Alice going through the hole.
Yes.
Cocaine, yes.
This was the first moment in a series of, you know, moments that are coming up where I was like, she's dumb.
Yeah.
Because she actually says, like, this is a terrible place to have a party, but come on. It's like, okay.
You know, she constantly just goes into trouble.
Oh, yeah.
She I just love trouble. How, like, she doesn't, like, flinch at anything. Like, I'm falling down. Bye.
Yeah,
like,
she's
no
just,
big
like,
deal.
Bye to the cat. And the cat's just like, see you later.
Okay. the cat literally waves.
Yeah. Somebody will find a mouse.
Yeah.
So I think this would be my first nomination for an iconic shot.
Yeah, definitely.
Yep. She gets down to the ground. We see the doorknob, not in the book. This is kind of special to the movie. And then there's been live action versions of the book, mm-hmm. which include the doorknob, because I just don't think they realize that
they probably
you know
don't.
They're yeah. like it's all the same.
Yeah.
So I enjoy this. I don't know. I like this movie. There's not a lot to discuss plot-wise.
No,
it's
really just a series of misadventures.
It's just every time Alice does something, you're like, what? Wait, why? No,
well,
what?
The other thing is, everyone in Wonderland is a massive dick.
Yeah.
Yep.
Like, yeah.
I wrote
yeah.
that down. Everyone. I wrote yeah. down Doorknob is a jackass.
Yeah, everyone is an asshole in this movie. And they brought this up in one of the things we were watching. I remember in the book, the White Knight was the only one who was genuinely nice to her.
Mm-hmm.
And they cut that sequence out of this film. So really, the only one in this film that's somewhat nice to her is Cheshire. But then the Cheshire goes to great lengths at the end to almost get her killed.
Yeah. Well, the one person that's the nicest to her is the king.
Yeah, the king. That's
yeah,
true.
He gives her a trial. Yeah.
He has no power.
I love how the White Rabbit's just so shits on the king.
Yeah.
And the king. Like every op he gets.
Loyal subjects.
So yeah, I was. It's really incredible how awful everyone is in Wonderland, and that is true to the book.
Yeah,
they are just incredibly rude to her and just driving her nuts. So we do meet though when she finally drinks and all that and shrinks down.
Eat
drink
me, drink me,
eat me, drink me. Very huge. Yes.
Drink me worked out so well the first time. Why not just eat whatever, and then do it again later on?
Well, she measures it out later, at least.
No, that was with the mushroom. But like in the rabbit's house, it's like, I'm going to just go through his stuff. Ooh, eat me. Okay. No big deal.
Yeah, she
she's a child. Yeah.
Okay, but the problem with this is, because it was the same thing even with like Snow White.
Wait, tell me the one problem with this.
Yeah. They're not animated like children. So I would think Alice would be at least like, I don't know, 12, 13.
That's still a child.
Wait.
I was not making foolish decisions at that age.
You're from the South in the 20s? What's a child for you?
Like 5, 6.
No, that's...
A 12-year-old's not a child in your eyes?
Not one who would make stupid mistakes like, I'm going to eat something.
5-year-olds are lucky they don't eat their own poop, okay? A
12-year-old,
trust me.
No,
I don't know how you're raising it.
We'll go get Connor while we're here.
Wait, how old's Kyle? 9?
We'll just leave that be.
9? Right?
Yeah.
He recently ate a Lego. He didn't know how he ate it.
He did. He ate a Lego, didn't know how he ate it.
So,
okay, and he's 9.
There we go.
All right. You might have to have a parent.
And he's
class.
Actually an intelligent 9, believe it.
Kids are dumb till like they're 33.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I mean, sure, I'm 39 and I'm still an idiot.
Dumb as rocks.
Yeah.
How old are you? Can't believe you made it here.
Apparently, breaking is older than me.
Yeah. Well,
it is. By a couple months, anyway.
Breaking's a classic.
Yeah. It is.
Breaking's a classic. So the Dodo is one of my favorite characters, and he shows up in the next sequence.
Yeah.
I love Dodo because he is almost as unflinching as Alice.
Mm.
In everything that happens, he's just like, yep, we're doing this now.
Yeah.
He doesn't panic ever,
nope.
Even again when committing arson. It's just one of those things.
It's just something he does.
And I love that song with the...
Oh, I'll say love life is a knife for me. And I never know. Ahoy! Another nautical expression. Land ho, by Jove.
Where am I, Dodo?
I don't know what the hell it is about them, but just him making that honking noise makes me laugh so much. And then we have the caucus race, which... I mean, perfect timing for us watching this now with the political spectrum that we are watching. Spectrum, a.k.a. horror show.
Yeah.
Just a bunch of morons running in a circle,
yeah.
Not getting anywhere.
Yeah, nope. Not getting dry because the waves keep crashing on him. But the guy on top is fine.
Guy on top is fine. He just doesn't understand why no one else, why it's not working out for anyone else.
And when she like tries to point it out, he's like, nope, we're all good.
Yeah. But he has a peace of mind to like lift the fire also.
Yeah.
So, smart guy. We get the introduction of Tweedledee and Tweedledum afterwards.
Yeah, I did notice when she goes into the forest here, it's very It reminded me of Sleeping Beauty because Mary Blair did the like background like look. It reminded me of a Sleeping Beauty forest.
Okay. Wasn't it different on Sleeping Beauty though?
Oh, it was more stylized.
It was Ken Anderson, I believe,
on yeah, the but I don't know. They had that same...
It strikes you in the same way.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Oh, yeah, of course, you know, talking about like the making of the film, Mary Blair's art is so influential to the tone and everything that you will see in a lot of the films in the 50s. So, you know, that's just... I feel like it's almost a given, but yeah, we should have said that somewhere in the beginning also.
Well, I did say that she did the stuff.
That's true. Yes, you did. So stuff. We get Tweedledee and Tweedledum. Again, just pains in the asses.
Yeah.
I like them.
No, yeah, they're not as bad as everyone else. They're like a good primer for what's to come, I guess.
Yeah.
The doorknob was pretty high.
Yeah.
The dodo was like, he doesn't mean to be an ass. He was actually kind of trying to be helpful.
Yeah.
Without making any logical sense. Any progress,
yeah. Well, he sounds like a politician, yes. That's basically what he was.
He sounds like a perfect politician.
He's like a dumb smart.
But Tweedledee and Tweedledum are, like, lonely.
Yeah, they reminded me of, like, she happened upon, like, two serial killer brothers that are just hanging out in the woods.
Yeah. But they just killed, so they're not going to kill again.
No, they're not going to kill him, but they're going to tell you a story.
Their bloodlust is
going to tell you a pretty horrible story.
I noticed during this one in particular, this sequence in particular, the facial animation on Alice is just incredible.
Yeah.
I noticed it now. I notice it whenever I watch the film now, but it's really, really something. I think it sticks out above all the other animation in the film.
Yeah.
Because, I don't know, I guess we see her so much.
Yeah. It is, yeah. And she's so, her face and her emotions is a major part of it, so.
Yeah.
You know, but the whole animation for I forgot how really much I love the look of this movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's got a very unique, cool look to it.
Yeah, just a really cool look.
So we get Tweedledee and Tweedledum eventually get us into the story of the walrus and the carpenter.
Or the curious oysters.
The curious oysters. Now, something I noticed with this was... We have another story in a Disney film about basically where the moral of this would be, if you leave home, you're going to die.
Yep.
Or like it's dangerous to leave home.
Yeah.
Well, which don't leave home seen. With strangers.
Yeah.
Don't follow strangers, I should say.
Yeah.
Why is March a bad month for oysters to leave their oyster bed? I forgot to look that up.
Oh, I have no idea. Because
There was an R in it.
If there's a logical reason to that in all the other nonsense in this film, that would be kind of phenomenal, but also really surprising.
Listen, you don't trust a guy who goes under the water with a cigar and still smokes it.
Yeah, that's it.
Just don't do it.
It's a great point.
Just don't do it.
It's a good, yeah. It's well thought out. Well thought out. How do you think that... No, don't worry about it.
That was my thought when I was watching. I'm like, why is he He's smoking in the water? What's going on here?
I think it's very interesting, though, how Disney always has that home is where safety is. Now, I understand, the going with strangers, but we've seen it so many times.
Oh, no, definitely.
And we're going to see it even more, mm-hmm. where it's just like, don't leave.
Yeah.
You know, don't go to the big city. Don't go exploring. And if you do, leave for a little bit and then come back home. You know, or you're going to get turned into a tar baby. Which, you know, we learned.
This happens.
But to be fair, in most of the other Disney movies, it doesn't end in, like, mass genocide, you know?
Yeah.
Like this one does.
He literally murders those characters.
Yeah.
I mean, he, like, eats the characters.
Yep.
Yeah. Clean. Yeah.
Clean.
They've been eaten.
My favorite part of that, though, is when the carpenter looks at him, and the water's like, the time has come.
And he's just like, yeah.
The time has come.
The jig is up.
Yeah. The jig is up and gone. Walrus has green eyes. Anyone notice that? Only sometimes. In some shots, it's just pure black. And then in other shots, he's got green eyes. And we've noted in many of the other films, green is always used to depict evil in the character's eyes. This one, you can also say it's envy. But I did find it odd that in some of the shots, they're just black.
You'll get that in some of them. Like in Sleeping Beauty, some of the shots, her eyes will look like blue, like very blue. And then in other ones, they all just look black.
It's interesting. I wonder why that happens. It's like certain angles, it doesn't look right or something like that.
Either that or just animators, different ones were taking over, fill-ins kind of thing.
I like this. I love this whole sequence. Somebody who usually doesn't like leaving the main narrative and... going on a side journey, this is actually one of the few I really enjoy.
Yeah. Well, I think it helps too because the whole movie's a side journey.
That's true.
You know, so maybe that it fits really well with just the whole movie.
But this is by far, because I want to say this is the only sequence in which Alice is not on screen.
Yeah.
This is it.
This is it.
Everything else, she's on screen 100%.
Yep.
Yeah.
So it was, you know, interesting to see that. And also, this was chosen in lieu of doing a Jabberwocky sequence.
Yeah.
Which would have happened when she's walking through the woods all alone. Basically, they decided they had to pick like one or the other because both would be too much. And I do think that 75 minutes is the right running time for this film.
Yeah.
I agree.
I don't think 10 more minutes or even 5 more minutes would have been a good decision.
No.
But they basically chose the Wallace and the Carpenter over the Jabberwocky sequence, which you might argue is kind of reluctant dragony.
Yeah, because of the way that they're describing him and the way that the concept art for him was.
Yeah, he was going to look very menacing in the shadows, but then when he comes out, he's going to be a very silly dragon.
Yeah.
So maybe they kind of felt like also, like, oh, we just kind of just did this also, so we don't have to go this route. And they can't do the Jabberwock maybe the way that they try, you know, like Dave obviously tried to do that in the latest Alice iteration, which is horrid. I want to find somebody who likes that movie, and I need to find out why they like it.
I don't know. I do like at the end of The Oyster Tale, though, when Tweedledee and Tweedledum are trying to tell her like the moral, and she's like, well, only if you're an oyster.
It's like, yep. Yeah.
Nope.
Yeah.
Right over her head.
Yeah, you know what? They were trying to be helpful, actually.
Yeah. They were, actually. Yeah,
right from
what?
The start,
right.
They were trying to be helpful. She's kind of a yutz.
Yeah.
She's a kid, though. It's all right. We go to Rabbit's house next, and there's a really much larger plot to this whole Mary Ann thing in the book.
Oh, okay.
Has to deal with a baby and the Duchess. Like, there is no Red Queen of Hearts in Alice in Wonderland. It's a Duchess.
Okay.
And then in the Through the Looking Glass, I want to say her name was. It was just the Red. Was it just the Red Queen? I can't remember. But there was no like Queen of Hearts in that. Yes, go.
The Duchess and the Baby. It reminded me of how Spirited Away, Yababa has the baby.
Yeah.
That's why I was asking you, like, is it like that?
I don't know.
Because the animation from Carol's book looked kind of like
Little Body, Huge Head.
Yeah, and then the Duchess was an older woman with a bun on top of her head and very grumpy looking.
You know, I'm not sure, but that, I mean, Spirited Away is a very it is an Alice in Wonderland story.
Yeah.
It's just a different take on Alice in Wonderland, much like Pan's Labyrinth is an Alice in Wonderland story. So, you know what? I wouldn't be too surprised. If we can ever speak to Hayao Miyazaki, that will be one of the things I ask.
Get on that.
Yeah, I don't think that's ever going to happen. So there we go. She goes upstairs, eats stuff. And
again.
Yeah, you were really annoyed by this.
Yeah, because why would you do that?
She's hungry. It was
9-year-old eat a Lego.
Terribly.
Yeah. I'm sorry.
That's why.
If you just saw a cookie laying around, you'd be like, cookie.
But not if I was in somebody else's house, and not after the last time I ate something in this world, I changed my size so much.
You realize this is an animated film, right?
Yeah, I know.
Right. Eat yourself, but not a tiger.
So, totally is.
I want to get you a shirt that says Idris Elba is a tiger. Sexual tiger. So now we get a lot of... This is one of my favorite sequences because as silly as the film is, they really go to 11
on this one.
Yeah. With the lizard, you know, the lizard is a lad, you know, lizard with a ladder and...
Bill the lizard.
The dodo coming by, totally okay with literally burning a man's house down. And then Bill shooting out of
the chimney.
The chimney is, I think, the funniest part.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When I think it's
Alice's poor
white,
Bill.
Well, yeah, she's just putting in the white rabbit's like, no, does the dodo say it?
Well, there goes Bill.
There goes Bill.
Yeah.
There's Dodo.
Yeah. And then Alice Dodo, is like, poor Bill.
That's it. I think that's one of the best like little comedic sequences in the whole film.
I just love how after all this, after Alice, figures out how to shrink down, and she leaves and the white rabbit leaves.
What's Dodo doing?
Dodo's like, nope, still gonna burn this guy down.
Yeah. If you follow this scene logically,
yep.
It ends with Dodo setting that house on fire.
I think he might be my favorite character.
For absolutely zero reason. And it's just, that's it. Like, Rabbit's house is it's gone.
Yeah, it's...
He sets his house on fire in the middle of the woods, mind you, so...
That went well.
I'm assuming it just turns into Bambi at the end.
I was going to say that. Yeah.
What we don't know is
it's
that...
It's a shared universe.
It's a shared universe. Disney did it first, Marvel. Or Marvel Disney. Or whatever you'd like to call yourself now. Where do we go to next? Who knows? Who knows?
I do.
Speak, woman, speak.
The bread and butterflies? These are my favorite little puns. I love them.
Yeah, the flower, the garden sequence.
Yeah, she goes into the flowers, and she's very tiny.
She's a wee lass.
Yeah.
And we get the golden afternoon sequence, the song.
Which I love.
And those flowers that were surrounding her when she's singing, they were scary looking flowers.
Yeah.
I was trying to remember what type of flowers those were.
I don't know, but they're scary.
I would say that is my next nomination for iconic shot is Alice singing her portion of three portions of metaphors with you. Singing her portion of Golden Afternoon when she's surrounded by the flowers and she's singing her part. I think that is also an iconic shot possibility.
This scene was my favorite, like,
scene
artistically drawn.
It's gorgeous,
isn't it?
I thought
the flowers with, you know, the way they used the certain flowers and they gave them the, you know, human-like qualities.
Yeah, it was really cool.
That was the best.
Like, as a fan of this film, I acknowledge that there are low points, but the high points are really, really high, and this is one of them.
Really high?
Really high.
I get it.
How high?
Not as high as the caterpillar.
We can't do that here.
No. What was that, Mills?
I said not as high as a caterpillar.
Yep. I don't know what that means.
Don't worry about it.
But yeah, great. Not as high as a caterpillar. Worry about you.
I'm funny. Shut up.
This sequence made me realize that I really wish there was a new Dark Ride of Alice in Disney World. The film kind of lacks a heart, but it absolutely does not lack eye candy and creativity.
No, not at all.
Like, there's really no warmth or anything to this film. They try to pull it off in the one scene.
Yeah.
And while it is effective, it's not a very, you know, it's such a tiny portion.
Yeah. And I remember reading that was one of the reasons why they felt it didn't do so well when it was released, that there was no character to really like that you could connect with like that, and there was no heart really like that.
Yeah, no, I agree with that too. Again, as much as I enjoy the film, it's not perfect. It has a pacing issue where you just don't know where you're going. Which again, that is the point of the book, so it does it correctly.
Yeah,
but maybe that makes the Alice in Wonderland is not really made for film.
Although, I mean, just ultimately taking it from how like the book is so segmented, I do feel like the movie does do a good job of she gets from point A to point B to point C.
Absolutely,
like, very
no,
well.
Yeah, it thinks it out correctly. Yeah. It thinks out its path correctly.
Yeah.
I'm just saying that when we're talking about, I want to see a film that has a narrative, like a driven narrative, which even those films exist too, and they're amazing. Richard Linklater's made a career out of making plotless films, but you enjoy the ensemble and the experience so well, it doesn't matter.
Right.
I don't know if Alice in Wonderland works, though, for that. Even though I feel that this film ultimately works, to kind of spoil something at the end. But I'm just not sure if... Stop making movies. How about... let's just say that.
Yeah.
Okay.
No more movies, Disney.
Don't make any more movies.
I felt like this was like a... This is like a Fantasia. You're with Fantasia. Alice as being just like the only part that's continuous.
Yeah. She's our tour guide through the land of Fantasia.
Because it's like every other scene is like a completely new set. And until the end with the queen and, you know, the Mad Hatter comes and all that stuff, there's really no connection between the other parts of the story.
Yeah, the introduction of the Red Queen is the only part where you have a plot.
Right.
Where it's like there's something to be driven for. Like, will Alice survive? Will she get through the trial and whatnot?
There's actually like a story. Everything else is just her.
Yeah, before that, it's just kind of
interacting with these weird characters.
It's Alice's Adventures in Wonderland. Yeah, I mean, it's exactly what it's supposed to be. But then that's my big question is this a story that begs for a film adaptation? is this just one of those things that you can get it mostly right, but there's always going to be something weird watching it in the film form?
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure. Or is it just a really kick-ass 45, 50-minute play?
Yeah, because I feel like up until that slow part, I really enjoy this so far. Like, right now, all the scenes that we're going through, like, I enjoy them. They're also very short. You know, like, nothing really has been extended to the point where it lost me. And the pacing for me right now has been, you know, good. Fairly quick and upbeat.
But when we get to that, when we get to what you're referring to, you sort of slash. Okay.
Yes.
All right. Well, we have this great sequence in the golden afternoon, and then we go to another, I want to say, iconic sequence, and that is the caterpillar sequence. And who is the voice again for the caterpillar? I have this in my notes, but I cannot find it. Where are you?
Richard Hynd, Haydn.
I thought it was Hayden.
I don't know. Maybe.
Oh, I believe it was Hayden.
Okay.
Hayden, you might be right, though. I'm terrible with reading.
Okay.
Stop. End of sentence. Terrible. This is a classic. Scott, forgive me. It does prove, though, vaping. Producing assholes for decades.
he was trying to be helpful to Alice, I thought.
Listen, he was not though? Vaping.
How was he trying to be helpful?
He was not at all.
He was proto-vaping. Her,
oh, yeah.
Yeah.
He was asking her a very existential question.
Who are you?
Who are you?
I hardly know, sir.
Yeah, he did, like, 8 times.
So, yeah.
So you think that was really, we're trying to get down
no,
to
No, he
it.
Was trying to tell her not to lose her temper while losing his temper.
Yeah, I don't know. This is a great mentor for you?
It was fabulous.
Explains a lot.
Yeah. I don't know.
Why?
Why what?
I don't know. He says it like 6 times in that
Why?
Scene.
Why?
Why?
I love this sequence. I think it's great.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, again, in the live action one, I don't think it works as well. And they have Alan Rickman doing it, and it still doesn't work as well. I just think this is a very specific kind of thing that is hard to replicate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It really kind of seems like they nailed exactly the tone that mm-hmm. this scene calls for in 1951.
Yeah.
And,
yeah,
like, uh-huh. don't try it again.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't, I don't think it works as well.
No, and I love Alan Rickman's voice, but I don't know. For this one, like, this guy's voice is like the caterpillar. It's got something to it that's just a little bit more.
Yeah.
I don't know.
And this was another part in the book where it's extremely wordplay and whatnot, and they have to water it down a little bit here.
Yeah.
Well, I feel like they do that more like with like the smoke, like when he says, like, why not? And the smoke forms like a knot, like a bow
yeah,
knot.
Yeah. But what I'm saying is, this is another part where I'm like, do they have to slow this book down a little bit to be a family film? Even though mm-hmm. the book was a children's book, I don't think, like, it's just a different animal.
Yeah. Because, like, back in those days when kids were reading those types of books, like, it was, I don't know, I feel like it was something more was expected of how children would understand things, or even like parents or, you know, people would read to the children to maybe explain things to them.
Even in the 50s?
1950s?
Yeah, like when the film came out.
No.
Do you still think that they wouldn't be okay with reading that?
I feel like that was kind of at the start where it was like, you know, parents were working and, sorry, leaving their kids and not necessarily like that one-on-one interaction where, like, in the 1800s, like, you know, I don't know. I just feel like it was a different culture kind of thing.
Okay. I just think the language changes so drastically.
Well, that too.
I think that's really kind of what it comes down to. But, again, this is another part of me for the difference between, like, a book and the type of book it is, and does it work for a film?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But the sequence, because they adjusted it correctly, works on its own. It doesn't have to follow the book to a T, even though it is kind of pretty accurate. This is one of the more on-point interactions throughout the entire film. We have, you know, this is also, you know, one side makes you taller, the other side shorter. Mm-hmm. A lot of, you know, you could say drug reference then when it comes in later. Not that it was intended as that, I don't believe, when it was originally written.
Right.
And Alice shoots up like a rocket. Although, actually, I really do love the caterpillar just losing his temper completely and yelling at her, the mushroom, of course.
Yeah.
I kind of love that.
By the way, I have a few more helpful hints. One side will make you grow taller.
One side of what?
And the other side will make you grow shorter.
The other side of what?
The mushroom, of course!
because it's such an obvious, like, yes, this thing, the only thing that I could possibly be referencing is what I'm talking about. So I always kind of love
I think you get that feeling sometimes. So that's why, you know, it, you really.
I love it.
You know what I loved with that, the sequence though, like when he's going through the metamorphosis and that, like the smoke encircles himself, that was just really a cool, that looked really great. I love the way
that's a really nice look.
Yeah.
He leaves his little shoes behind.
Yeah.
His little Iron Sheik shoes.
I like the part where he blows the pink smoke at her and it like stops her. And
yeah, it's like stuck on her feet. Foot. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That was cool.
So now she,
it's cool,
bro.
So she shoots up. And the my least favorite character of this entire movie comes in.
The bird.
That goddamn bird.
Yeah.
The bird with the cage in his middle?
No. The bird that she goes up into the tree and she's yelling serpent at.
Yep, that's right.
Her voice is just too annoying to listen to for more than 10 seconds.
Yeah.
I tried looking up that woman because her voice sounded very familiar. She did a ton of TV shows.
Uh-huh.
She was in like I Dream of Jeannie and Bewitched and stuff. So I think that's where, like, I think she was one of the annoying neighbors at one point in Bewitched. But yeah, like her voice is just irritating.
Was she in the nanny?
What was that?
Fran Drescher.
Fran Drescher. I absolutely, this part irritates me. Like I have trouble listening to it because I hate listening to her voice over and over again. It seems like she just keeps screaming serpent like 30-40 times
because that's it, that's really all she does.
So I kind of, this is the one point in the movie I really do not like.
Yeah,
like I wish I could just fast forward. It maybe only lasts like a minute too. It's not a lot. It's just that that ear piercing screech drives me nuts.
Like that part could have been about 20 seconds.
But it does bring into a common theme in the film, whereas Alice never thinks of what she speaks and to whom she speaks it, and that's what always gets her into trouble.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like, she was trying to be logical, and you've already, like, established it's not a logical place, so.
Yeah, you know, she works her way into being called a weed. She works her way into being called a serpent. Later, she's telling a story, and she says the word cat. There's always something that she does that aggravates, that's, like, the perfect trigger word for the situation that she is in.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a running theme throughout the film. So I absolutely hate that goddamn bird, though. Oh, my God. But she goes back to normal size. She finally figures it out, measures it out, throws it in her pockets, which is good storytelling because there's some feature films where you're like, where the hell did they get this crap from in their pockets? And this one actually takes care of that. And we get the Cheshire Cat.
One of my favorite parts.
Tell me about it.
No.
Jesus, it's like being on a train all alone, but filled with people. So the Cheshire Cat, when he arrives, he's actually reciting the first verse of the Jabberwocky poem, which I will butcher right now. "'Twas brilling and the slithy toves did gyre and gimble in the wabe. All mimsy were the borogroves, and the mom wraths out grabe."
I love it.
That was pretty good.
Yeah.
That wasn't any good, but it's as good as it's going to get in this program.
I love his sing-songy voice, the way he does that.
Go.
Sterling Holloway looks exactly the way you would imagine Sterling Holloway should look.
Yeah.
He's a weird looking dude.
Yeah.
But I love his voice.
Absolutely love it. Adore it. And the fact that he does, you know, he's the Cheshire Cat, but he's Pooh Bear. And he's Ka.
And he's the stork from Dumbo.
It's crazy.
It's so random.
The only time that I've ever actually seen him in live action, not because I haven't really circled it out, was Twilight Zone.
Mm.
He is the TV repairman who turns the TV like into a future-seeing machine, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
That the guy sees his future in it while he's watching television. That, I think, is really the first and only time I really saw him on film. I'm sure he probably is in another Twilight Zone. It would fit. And I remember thinking, that is exactly what I think this cat should look like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, there's no other look for it. There's phenomenal editing in this sequence. In particular, going back and forth to the Cheshire Cat, and he's always in a different position.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And it reminded me, actually, oh, no, you didn't see it with us. I just saw the movie Keanu.
Oh, you're right.
This weekend, and there was a great editing comedic sequence in that, which without the editing wouldn't have been as funny.
Oh, yeah. Well, you were talking about that on the filmmaking.
And
yeah.
this kind of reminded me of that, where you see the Cheshire Cat, he's in a particular position, you cut back to Alice, and every time you cut back to the cat, he's in a totally different position.
Yep. Yeah.
Which also just shows the level of thought that goes into all the animation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Either that or it's the worst, segmented editing of all time.
I just love when he was like, you could go see the Mad Hatter. Oh, well, I don't want to go to him because he's mad. Well, you could see the March Hare, but he's mad too. And I love
talk about that. Well, actually, no, remember you pointed something out.
Now. Yeah, because I, again, hadn't kind of seen this movie in a long time or paid attention to it, I guess, really also. Mm. A lot of the Alice stuff or Cheshire Cat stuff you see now, the quote is, we're all mad here, right? But in this film, he doesn't say that. He says, most everyone's mad here.
Yeah. The book is, we're all mad here. In the film, though, it's not. But when you get shirts with the animated Cheshire Cat on it, it uses the quote from the book.
Yeah, it was kind of confusing. Yeah.
Because the quote from the movie doesn't work as well, in my opinion.
No. I feel like it fits,
should be everyone is, we're all mad here. It should be that.
But I guess not really.
Who's not mad?
Alice?
She doesn't live there. She's not a resident. There, yeah.
But she's baddie.
Yeah, she's
also.
She's kind of crazy.
She
was telling her cat that she wants to like wear clothes and know English earlier in the film. Which is crazy.
But that would be adorable.
Again, though.
Most everyone's mad here.
I'm going back to the camp.
Well, most everyone.
That's
so I guess
like an unspecific, like most everyone. You're like, did you turn off like all the lights? Most of all the lights. Like, did you set that dude's house on fire? Yes. No, that's an absolute yes.
Mostly all the way.
Set that man's house on fire mostly all the way. And the house took care of the rest of it. But yeah, I was, this sequence is phenomenal. Like, this is another iconic sequence. Like, that's the weird thing with this film is, it really is like scene after scene of incredibly popular scenes, but as a full narrative, it's a mishmash like the book is, but it works in that form. And I mean, I loved it, so I guess it does work in this form. So, and now from here, where do we go? Where do we go, Melissa? Huh?
The Mad Tea Party.
Yes, we do.
Yes. And we get another very popular song.
Which one?
The Unbirthday song.
If anybody unbirthday to me.
You?
Yes, to me. Yes. I think this is, again, another classic scene. I think we get another iconic shot candidate. That is when the Hatter has the cake, Alice is in the middle, and the Hare is on the right when Alice is seated down.
Mm.
That would be another like nominee for iconic sequence. Scott, where are you right now in this film? Like, are you enjoying this? Are you on board? What's going on?
I'm enjoying it just because I think at this point I've realized that there's no how or why to any of it. Like, I'm just going to enjoy what I'm seeing. I'm in that kind of state because up until then, it's, like you just said, it's been a mishmash of.
You're on a roller coaster.
Yeah,
on a roller coaster. No one's telling you a story, but you're enjoying your time.
Right. The only thing I know is that Alice is trying to get somewhere. I don't know where she's going.
She's not even sure
she doesn't know where
she's
going.
No,
right.
She doesn't. She's following a character whom she has no idea what the hell he's doing because he is a massive dick.
Yep.
And can't answer a simple question.
Right. It's all riddles.
Like, numerous times he could have just been like, I'm going to the palace. Like, that's all. She could have heard that and been like, British, we got palaces. And like, that was it. That could have been the whole film.
Yep.
But no.
But then there wouldn't be adventures.
There wouldn't be. There would not be the decimating of a man's home.
Yep.
a woman thinking her child is going to get eaten by a snake.
Mm.
Haughty, taughty flowers. And Cheshire Cat. Brian, what about you?
Oh, yeah. No, I'm into this.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, I was drunk watching it, so.
Were you really?
No, I was.
Oh. No, it was much more enjoyable.
No, it was much more enjoyable. No, but yeah, I was into this.
I don't do acid or drugs. I would, though, and watch this movie.
I can only imagine.
I can see that it might be an interesting way of going to boot it.
Yeah.
Does anyone else have any thoughts on the Mad Hatter sequence?
I love this
sequence.
Can
we talk about? Yeah, we have to talk about this.
Oh, yeah.
I just love, like, I love all the gags that they do, like, half a cup of tea and he cuts the cup in half and it works.
Really, and it's so rapid fire. There's, like, no break at all in this entire scene. It's just one after another.
And even like when happening. Like Alice herself is trying to get a break, they're like, nope, got to get up, move down. Like,
yeah, clean cup. I don't know the rules between that. Is it like a thing for English tea?
I have no idea.
It might be, yeah.
I didn't look that up because I was like, I don't know if this is going to be worth my time to look this thing up.
You deep dive in it for 2 hours and you find out.
I love when he was pouring the cups and there was like three stacked on top of each other and he took the bottom one and it was full. I don't know. All the stuff I love.
I really love it when the rabbit shows up, though.
Oh, the white rabbit.
When the rabbit shows up. Oh, by the way, actually, you know, we talk about this really quick. Do you guys know where the term Mad Hatter comes from?
Oh, I do.
No.
Tell me where the term Mad Hatter comes from.
Mad as a Hatter comes from when the people, the hatters back in the day who used to make hats. I forgot the proper name for it. That's why I was stalling.
It's okay. That's fine.
There's an actual name for it.
Hat man?
No, it's a something. Look it up for me because I'm going to forget it. But they used to use mercury in how they made hats. And if you are exposed to mercury, it's not a good thing. It would give you pretty much like nerve damage and a whole bunch of mental issues where you would shake and go crazy. So Mad as a Hatter is from the mercury poisoning that they would suffer.
A milliner.
That's it.
Is that right? Milliner?
Yes. Yeah.
A milliner. That's someone a who hat makes maker. Hats.
Yeah.
It's your daily trivia for today, guys. Milliner.
They use that in the live action Alice, and I don't think anybody mercury? Gets it. No, milliner. Oh. Because nobody knows what that is. But I forgot where I learned it from, but I was like, oh, I know that.
Well, you just learned it earlier today.
No. It wasn't. Oh, okay. No, it was. I think it was from one of the history podcasts I listened to.
Oh, okay. So yeah, that is where that's actually where the Mad Hatter comes from. Mad
and the March Hare.
Uh huh. Tell me.
Since rabbits mate in the spring, usually in about March is when the males are going crazy looking for their females.
The animation on his eyebrows and his nose is incredible.
Yeah.
I mean, there's always something twitching.
Yep.
And all that. The Dormouse, though.
Mm.
Oh, he's the best.
He is the best.
He was like, drunk.
Yeah,
no,
drunk.
That is a heroin addict.
That is.
That's a heroin addict. Because they literally put smack on his face.
That's, you know what? That's like, true. They like smack him back up. He's going.
Like they put smack on his face and he's like,
Yeah, that's right.
And he goes right back down for the sleep.
Yeah, that is right.
But if you yell out, cops. Some bitch loses his mind.
Cat. Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
So that's what I think.
That is... No, that, you know what? That's perfect. Yep.
So the white rabbit shows up, and my favorite sequence is the Mad Hatter fixing, well, assisting.
Quote, unquote, what word is that? Yeah.
Destroying that watch is my favorite thing, especially the mustard bit.
But butter, of course, it needs some butter. Butter? Oh, thank you, butter. Yes, that's fine.
Oh, no, you'll get crumbs in it.
Oh, this is the very best butter. What are you talking about?
Tea?
Tea? Oh, I never thought of tea, of course.
No.
Tea?
No, not tea.
Sugar?
Sugar, 2 spoons, just 2 spoons, thank you, yes.
Be careful.
Jam?
Jam, I forgot all about jam. Just show you what a place to do.
Mustard,
yes, but... Mustard? Don't let's be silly. Lemon, that's different. There. That should do it.
Just, you know, and then was it, what's at the very end? Lemon, that's a different story.
Yeah, that's a different story. Yeah. It just squeezes the lemon. I love it. And he closes it and, like, cuts the jam around it for some odd reason.
And then it's just, you know, two months slow? What is
two
it?
Days.
2 days. Two days late.
2 days.
Yeah, 2 days late.
Whatever he says. Absolutely love it. Something I noticed on this one, though. When he smashes the watch, it all goes black and white.
Yes.
Color comes out of the picture, which mirrors in Fantasia when Mickey chops up the first broom.
Yep.
He killed it.
So that's interesting because in Fantasia, we were like, oh, well, it's because he destroyed it like a piece of magic.
Mm-hmm.
Was the watch like, am I supposed to see the watch in the same way or?
I just thought he was like killing something, so it took all the color out of it.
All right. Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, I guess. That's pretty dark.
Yeah.
The watch was sentient.
Yeah. It was 2 days late.
Feelings.
Yeah, it did.
He tortured the hell out of that thing.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
Two spoons?
Yeah, he like smashed 2 spoons in his ass. It's not good. So this is where I think the film kind of takes a little bit of a too long of a pause is when Alice then runs off into the woods because obviously she's going to be murdered at this house if she stays there much longer. She runs off into the woods. And this is where the Jabberwock sequence would have been. Also where the White Knight sequence would have been. But they took those both out and kind of left her on her own. And we get to the song, Very Good Advice.
I give myself very good advice, but I very seldom follow it. That explains the trouble that I'm always in.
The part where the broom dog is sweeping away the path.
That really bugs you.
All the time from when I was little, I hated it because I was like, she's got to get out of here. She has nowhere to go and he's taking away the path. And then, yeah, and then she sits down and cries and everything cries with her and it's just, it's terrible.
And then they all disappear.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really
weird. See,
that
was something I forgot, that they all just disappear.
And I think some of them were normal looking. Like,
oh, no.
No.
No, no, like the vulture looking ones were normal,
I believe.
They
had bat bodies.
Yeah, they were umbrellas, dude.
No, were they?
Yeah.
No, they were. They did have vulture heads, though. Or dodo vulture heads.
Okay, yeah. Maybe I didn't notice the other part. Maybe I forgot that other part.
Yeah, no, nothing in that sequence.
I blocked it out because it was too scary. It
looked like anything that should
be
ever.
The pencil head birds and the
glasses. Now, the whole part of the White Knight would have been that he would have helped her kind of get the message that she sends to herself with very good advice.
Mm-hmm.
He would have aided her in that. But they wanted it to be that she figures it out on her own. I would have loved to have seen the alternate version of this.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Just to see how it plays out.
This is where it lost me, because it's just like, it's so sad and so depressing. And it's like, everything was so like bouncy and happy, and now it's just like plummet to the
but
ground.
But it changes almost immediately.
I don't know.
It turns on a dime. No, not for you?
No, it lost me. Like
the rest
gone.
Of the way.
I don't care. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Okay.
Because you know what it is for me here? Like, especially when she's talking to Cheshire Cat, like, she, like, is like, I want to... To me, she was almost like Dorothy talking to the wizard. Like, I want to go home. And he doesn't give her, like, a way home. Like, I know Alice doesn't know where she wants to go. But to me, that it was almost like that's what she should have said. Like, I want to go home. Like, because she was at that spot where she was so low. Like, she just wants home.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess he's kind of a dick.
Just like the wizard. And then after that point in the Wizard of Oz 2, like, I don't care.
Really?
The
whole, like, going and getting the witch and throwing the water on her, nothing?
Eh. I didn't like it.
All right.
See, this part to me kind of reminded me of in Peter Pan. You know, when Wendy's singing, you know, Your Mother and Mine, and all the, you know, the Lost Boys start to just, like, stop, and they get really sad with her. I think, like, they took something from...
Yeah, that's kind of the same. Yeah. What, Peter Pan's, what, 53? If I remember correctly, so we're very...
Soon,
we're on the heels.
That's right.
We're on the heels of that baby-stealing some bitch. Really, the movie's crazy. The movie's really crazy. They try to murder Wendy. Like,
not Alice crazy, but it's crazy.
It's it's got its own sort of crazy.
I did think it was funny.
There might be some
there
might be some inappropriate scenes in that one anyway. Yes.
No, you were saying like all the things disappear like when Alice is sad. Like I was trying to like figure out like, you know, when she's like using her imagination, it's all like Wonderland and it's all like happy, everything's like animated.
The walls are starting to crumble down, maybe?
Maybe.
Either that or Cheshire Cat kind of rules everything. Because they disappear and then he appears.
No, yeah, the queen's rules.
Yeah, but
I know, I know.
But yeah, that could be part of it. Yeah, she starts losing the want to be there, and so the world starts kind of coming apart. And the Cheshire Cat maybe
pulls
her back in because there's work to be done. We have to get you in a suit of armor for some stupid freaking reason. Yeah. God, I can't get that damn movie out of my head.
What?
Stupid.
He's talking about
the live action.
Yeah.
Oh. Ghostly. I don't even remember that.
There's really not a lot to remember. So now we go to Painting the Roses Red.
Painting the Roses Red.
Now, Melissa.
Yes.
Riddle me this.
Riddle me that.
Who be singing that?
Some very mellow men, I've been told.
Oh, God almighty, why did I ask?
Painting the roses red. Painting the roses red, we cannot stop a wasted drop, so let the paint be spread. Painting the roses red, painting the roses red. Oh, painting the roses red, and many a tear we shed,
because we know
they'll cease to grow.
In fact, they'll soon be dead.
Oh, and yet we go ahead.
Can you do it? Can you tell people who's singing this without embarrassing me?
No.
Too late.
Too late.
The Mellow Men,
yes,
who consist of Thorl Ravenscroft, Bill Lee, Max Smith, and Bob Hamlin.
Now, what's the connection? We actually brought these guys up recently because when we were talking about Cinderella, Eileen Woods, I put up a clip on the website of her on a TV show, and basically it was a musical number of her walking out of her apartment, and she's like singing because she's happy because she met somebody the night before, and four people stick their head out the windows like, shut up, you know, and then they all start singing, and those were the Mellow Men, and now here they are again. Which they do appear a number of times in other Disney stuff, but I thought that was really cool that, you know, this is who our cards were.
Yeah.
So, quite a card, wouldn't you say? See, that's
how you deliver it. That's how you nail
that's
it.
How you do, that's the goods. I thought actually you brought up Oz just a little bit ago, Wizard of Oz. I thought the Queen's initial ranting of "Who painted my roses red?" was very similar to "Who killed my sister?"
Yeah, yep.
It's almost the same delivery, mm-hmm. You know, the same inflection on certain letters and whatnot. So I don't know. I never noticed that before until we watched it yesterday.
Yeah, I do like when the Queen is talking to Alice and she calls her "my child." She's like trying to, you know, instill manners in her and everything. But when she says "my child," it's very much the way Flora says it to Sleeping Beauty. So it's such a weird juxtaposition.
Oh, okay.
To see, like, in this reference, she's doing it in such a...
And that, of course, that's Verna Felton,
yeah, it's the
who
same
voices
voice.
Flora.
Yeah.
I think it's crazy how much more I'm sorry I'm doing this again. How much more entertaining this version of the Queen is compared to the live action that we were given.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
She's just got so much going on. And I don't usually like yelly performances. Like, they just grate on my nerves. But there's a good balance here between the King and the White Rabbit. And the,
yeah,
you know, when we have the trial, other people are there. And the Dodos. Yeah. You know, there's just so much to laugh at.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's broken up enough that it doesn't become overbearing.
It doesn't become like, oh, God, it's just about her now and I got to deal with this thing. And it
and
just
even herself,
really works.
Like, she goes from talking sweet to losing her temper and raging and talking sweet again.
My favorite part with her is when she's... That's the most important part.
Nothing whatever. Nothing whatever. So, yeah. That's very important. Yeah, Alice's trial is great. I've always been a huge fan of that. And I didn't... This was just something... Because I recently listened to... I hadn't read the book in a long time. But actually, there's an incredibly cool audiobook of Alice in Wonderland as read by Scarlett Johansson, which is available on audible.com. And I actually got it. It wasn't very much. I want to say it was like $7-$8 when it first came out. It was on sale. And she does voices for all the different characters and whatnot. So it's really, really cool. When Alice says, you know, "What are you to me? Nothing but a pack of cards." In the book, that gets her out of Wonderland. That's it. She kind of wakes up then.
Oh, really?
Yeah, but in this, you have, like, that chase scene afterwards.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But initially, yeah, the cards, like, surround her, and she says, you know, why would I fear you? You're nothing but a pack of cards. And they all jump on her, and then she just kind of wakes up in the field. And that's how that film ends. And then the sister gets, like, a hint that it did happen. That was another thing that doesn't happen in the movie.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, it was a straight-up dream.
In the book... they leave you with the idea that this actually did happen, which I think is really cool. And then it ties into, you know, through the looking glass,
right,
of course. But I mean, I don't know, anything stand out in particular? The trial sequence, I think, is just absolutely hysterical.
Oh yeah, that was my favorite. The trial sequence.
The dope fiend mouse comes in and, you know, makes a wreck of everything. And I just, every time the Mad Hatter's on, I just absolutely love it so much.
I just love how, you know, the Cheshire Cat again, like, gets her into trouble, like,
does.
Always being, like, right behind the Queen or on her back or whatever, and, you know.
Is it the King who hits her with a hammer?
Yes.
Yeah.
It's the King, right?
Yeah.
Smashes her in the head with a hammer?
What about a trial?
Oh, another little thing in the book, and they kind of give you the implication in the movie, in the animated film that we're watching, that when she says "off with their head," they drag somebody off, and it's a safe assumption that they actually do murder this person.
Yeah.
In the book, they make a point of saying that no one ever gets their head actually cut off. She just yells it, and then the King will come up with something that they don't.
Oh, but see, it's funny, because, yeah, in the animated film, he's like, "Nope, off with his head, order of the Queen, off with
his head." Yeah, he really pushes it. But in the book, he always comes up with something that gets that person out of trouble. Or something wacky happens and they forget about that person. Yeah. But in this one, you see, I want to say, two or three cards like dragged off to their death.
Oh, yeah, a couple of them.
So I thought that was like a... It's funny because they try to avoid some darker tones from the book, but then they make their own tones, which you could argue are darker than the ones that they were looking to fix.
Yeah.
So it's a really interesting flip all the way around. So
can we just talk about how cute the hedgehogs were when they were playing croquet?
Yes, we can.
And cute little balls of fluff.
All right. Is that it? That's all you got?
And the Keen flamingos. Observation. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
The flamingo noises.
The flamingos reminded me of the flamingos we would later see in Fantasia 2000.
Yes.
During the yo-yo sequence. Yeah. I kind of think that's on purpose.
Probably.
Right? And that sound.
I really thought that was great. Like another like voice actor, but it was. Was it a voice actor? I thought he made the sound.
Yes. He was one of the Foleys, if I remember correctly. He was one of the main Foleys. And I guess, not traditionally a voice actor, but he was the one who came up with that laugh.
Yeah.
Very Goofy-esque laugh. Which I really liked.
The part with the whole red, the Red Queen scene.
Yes.
When they're painting the flowers.
Yes.
I kept on thinking to myself, like, there is so much paint going around.
Yeah. Yes.
And nobody has paint on them.
Yeah, none of them.
At all. Not even, Alice, just on the ground.
Alice hides a wet paintbrush.
Yeah.
Under her dress, like between her dress and the ground.
Yeah.
And gets up and there's no problems.
Yeah. It's just like, nah.
Yeah.
This is apparently only on nature paint.
You were really pissed off by the paint dispersal.
Yes, I was really, really mad about it.
I did note that, too. Something. I was like, she got no paint on her.
Yeah, because it was like pretty evident that they were just splashing that stuff all over the place.
Everywhere.
Yeah, and it's like,
everyone's squeaky clean. And it didn't get on any other part of the tree, either. It only covered the flower. Yep. Even though they were like, bleh.
That's how you paint. You didn't know that? That's how we're going to paint a new apartment.
He's just going to take a paint can and just splash it.
Yeah.
Or in a Pollock.
It's basically going to be a Pollock. Like, this is autumn. Autumn number 18. Whatever the hell it is. And so, Alice runs away then after being sentenced to death, as is the tradition in Disney films. And she gets her way through that jackass of a door again.
Oy.
Who actually, this time, he's like, I'm going to be helpful. You're sleeping, moron. It's like, oh, yeah, all right.
There you are. So
Alice wakes up, and that's it. That is our film. Alice wakes up from her adventures in Wonderland.
And they go have tea.
And they go have tea, I assume. And
that's what the sister says. It's time for tea.
And I hope Alice tries to chew one of the plates.
That would be amazing.
As the Mad Hatter does. And that's when they throw her in the hospital.
And this is where it ends. We actually have our first voice cast, so-and-so plays so-and-so.
Yeah, we actually have cast listed and who they voiced.
Yeah, like
which
credits.
They've never had that before in their animated features. And the reason for that was because to promo this film, they had big names. Like, to have Ed Wynn and Verna Felton meant something, So to get more people to come to the theater to see this movie, they felt that it was necessary. And again, they did say, this is one of those films where these characters are so well known, we don't have to hide them.
Yeah.
We can be upfront with them.
Yeah.
So I think that goes into why the credits were the way that they were, the opening credits.
Yeah, yeah.
Was because there was nothing to hide behind the behind the curtain. Like, you knew who was in these films.
Yeah.
You knew Tweedledum and Tweedledum. You knew Alice. You knew the Red Queen. All that kind of, well, I guess really not, because it wasn't the same thing, but still. So the movie's over. So, questions?
Answers.
Shall we go to our questions and answers?
Yes.
First question, does this film, you want to save that for last? Let's save that one for last.
Okay.
What's the iconic shot for you? Brian Bogad, answer.
Mine would be the tea party scene with their... Tea party scene, yo.
Okay.
With all around the table.
Okay, Birdman, what next?
Yeah, no, that's mine.
What shot? Like
the one you were talking about, where they're all on the frame. All them.
I want specifics here.
Yes.
All right. So you're talking about the birthday cake.
The birthday cake. Yeah.
Okay. Melissa, I'm going to skip you for. I'm going to go to Scott first.
Okay.
So Melissa's going to say something from Snow White.
I wasn't prepared for this.
What do you got, Scott?
Mine is actually the scene I said earlier when she's in the garden. With the flowers.
With the flowers around her.
Yes.
Okay, and she's singing her part of Golden Afternoon.
Yep.
Excellent.
I like it.
Melissa!
I actually like from the very beginning where she's up in the tree with Dinah making the flower crown.
Okay. Placing it on her head when she's just making it. Like, what's
no, yeah,
the,
where
the
she
still
where
shot?
She places it on the cat's head and it like falls on the cat's eyes.
So, if I'm hearing this correctly.
It's a gif. It just loops. It's like, bloop, bloop, bloop.
Can't you go by the actual rules of what we made? Can't you just pick a shot? Now, wait a minute. I want to first discuss this. Your iconic shot of Alice in Wonderland is one where Alice is not visible. Is that correct?
No, it's just up in the tree with the cat.
That shot in particular, can you see Alice?
I don't know. Oh, yeah, in my head you can. In my head,
God.
It's Alice on the tree branch with the cat with the flowers in her hand.
Okay.
And she's making the thing, and then she puts it on her head.
No, that's not a shot. That's movement.
That's a scene. That's 10 seconds.
No,
of the scene.
You're doing this by the rules. Just once. All right.
I've done it by the rules before.
Okay, you're gonna do it again. I want a still shot. I'll come back to you if you'd like. I can pause the show.
No, it's her in the tree making the flower crown.
Okay.
With the cat on her lap.
Okay. I like it.
And then she puts it on the cat's head, and then she goes on an adventure for 45 minutes.
You know, that whole thing?
But then once you get to the path, forget it.
Oh, my God.
See, shot's done.
Melissa just shuts down after the path is gone.
You are the worst, Burr.
But did anyone else think that dog kind of had, like, Pluto-like movements?
Wait, which dog?
The dog that was sweeping
the
path away.
Oh, the sweepy dog. Yeah, I guess
it was kind of
so.
Like
a dog.
Like a dog.
Like a dog.
But not like a goofy dog.
No, not like a goofy dog. Like a Pluto.
My iconic shot would be her falling down the well, down the rabbit hole, where she's leaning over to turn on the lamp. Like, if you just freeze frame that. It's also like the piece of art, the WD Classics Collection piece that I really, really want is Alice falling through the rabbit hole. It's really, really nice. That would be my iconic shot. And it's weird because it's a shot. Not a series of shots that would make a scene.
As she's falling down the entire thing.
No, that's the...
I got it. I like the Karen Hallian artwork of Alice, though, falling down, and it's a mashup with Doctor Who, so there's like a ton of Doctor Who references in that.
I remember that one. Yeah, that was a nice one.
Beautiful.
Like, Bad Wolf was written on the wall or something
on the
like
TARDIS.
That.
And
on
then
the
there's
TARDIS?
Like,
oh, okay.
The Fourth Doctor's scarf, and there's an adipose, and a whole bunch of other stuff.
All right.
It's really fun.
Let's go to our second question, shall we? Melissa, what's our other question? The morals thing that I always say incorrectly.
Yeah, is it a morals or an emotional film?
Scott, is this film a film that is looking to get an emotional response out of you? Or is it trying to teach you a moral? Or is it both? Or is it none?
If I had to say anything, I would probably
you
say
do.
Moral.
Okay. Moral. What would be the moral?
Don't do drugs.
Don't do drugs. No, really. What would be the moral?
The moral would be to know, you know, who you are and where you want to go. Don't just be, you know, stumbling through something because you don't like what the situation you're in.
Stumbling through life.
Okay, yeah. So know what you want. Don't run blindly into issues.
Right.
Something like that?
Yes. Yeah,
okay,
like
I can buy that. I can buy that. Melissa?
I actually was thinking along with Scott, it's morals. I mean, I think a lot of the characters do try to teach her morals. I don't think it goes very well.
In their
well.
Own twisted way, yeah.
Yeah. Even she said it herself. She tries to teach herself lessons and she doesn't listen. So maybe
she very seldom follows it.
Sometimes
someone may say that.
Someone, maybe. Yeah, I would say it would be either follow the advice that you're given, or yeah, like know who you are. Know the path.
You can't say that without that accent coming out, huh?
Know the path you're going on. Don't let a sweepy dog sweep it away.
That's all right. That's like seven things. Okay. No, I got what you're saying. You got what you're saying.
You get me?
I love torturing. So much fun. Brian! Shut up! No, what do you got?
I think it's neither. I don't think it's really any... I don't think there's trying to be an emotional response or morals. Like, in the overall thing, I don't think that they're trying to come across with anything, to be honest. Some certain scenes, I do think there is maybe like an underlying moral, like we were talking about with the Walrus and the Carpenter, you know. But in the overall general sense, I don't really think that they were trying to come across with any anything like that. It was just a bunch of crazy stuff.
Story.
Yeah. I believe it to be nonsense. The highest quality form of nonsense. But nonsense nonetheless. There's fun stories to be learned in the language itself if you really want to break down stuff. But I've never really felt that this movie had a moral or a specific message. It's just a road trip film with an insane amount of cocaine.
Okay.
But I think it's great. I can definitely agree with where Scott and Melissa are coming from, though.
Well, I think
I think you can absolutely see it that way. And that might be the correct way of seeing it.
Well, that's what I was going to say. I think you can pull that out of it and you can see it that way. I don't know if that's what they were trying to come across with, though. Yeah. I think that
the only reason I think that, though, is because, you know, at first in the beginning she was saying, you know, I want to be in a world where nothing makes sense and I want, you know, all this crazy stuff. And then that scene where she breaks down, she starts crying. You know what I mean? Like, she realizes that's not what she wants.
Yeah. No,
you know what I mean?
It's frustrating.
Yeah, it's frustrating to not know anything that anybody is trying to say to you.
Yeah.
You know, they're all trying to push you in different ways.
Well, she should just come to 2016 America because nothing makes sense.
Yes.
Everything is insane.
Alice in Wonderland.
We're basically living Alice in Wonderland right now.
I'm gonna set
but it's Underland.
I'm going to set Brian's house on fire before we leave here.
No, we need to...
Shut up, Brian. That's already happening.
All right. That's what that smell is.
Yeah, no, after like hearing you two say that, I can see that as being a thing. But when I watch it, I didn't immediately think of that.
So I felt like, because it was almost like, you know how like kids' stories, like they're very short and succinct and they try and teach a quick moral, like, you know, a little bit. Mm-hmm. So I felt like every scene, like there was a little bit of that.
But that was kind of the reason why this book was such, when it came out, it was such a success and it was so different. It changed the trend. Because it specifically did not do that.
Well, I don't know if it didn't specifically do that. And I don't know. I've never read the book, so I'm not really sure. I'm just going by based on the movie. But I thought that the book was so different because they've never told like a children's story like in such a whimsical way. It was more of like a very dark type of, you know, lesson. Whimsy? I did.
Whimsy!
It was whimsy.
Yeah. No, yeah. I can see why you think that, but yeah, I don't know. From what we were watching today, actually, that was one of the points that they made, was that the book didn't have a moral to tell.
Oh, okay.
It was just kind of like, no, we're not going to do that just because we're a children's book. You know, that's not going to be the point of this book. It's going to be like a satire.
Yeah. Sometimes a story is just a story.
Sometimes a mailbox is just a mailbox.
Reminds me of Canterbury Tales.
That has a message, I think.
No, yeah. Each story has a message, but each story is crazy and outrageous. But it was targeted for adults, so it's kind of like
Alice in Hell.
No,
Alice in Helderland. Do you think this film holds up, Melissa?
I do. I think it's fun enough if you're young that you can get into it. The songs are catchy. The colors are bright and pop. So I think that it's definitely more cartoony feel in certain parts. Where I think, it'd be good.
Brian Bogan.
I definitely do. I think it holds up. I think the runtime really helps it in that term. And, you know, for that reason also, that it's short and it doesn't, you know, overstay its welcome. And it a lot of stuff reminds me of cartoons kind of growing up, you know. So, yeah. And even now, some of the cartoons, I could, you know, it's reminiscent of like an Alice thing, so I think kids nowadays would have no problem with it.
Scott?
No, I'd rather watch the live action film.
You're fired.
Scott's no longer on the Disney Magic Hour.
Thanks for joining us.
No, I do. I definitely think this holds up. I mean, like everyone was saying, it's a fun, if you don't go into it thinking it's going to be a story that you have to follow, you'll enjoy it more.
All the better.
Yeah.
I think it gets better with time. I really do. I think this is one of those films that it was underappreciated when it came out, and it has just gotten more and more the appreciation that it deserves as it goes along. It's a batshit crazy movie. It really is. But it's entertaining. It's funny. It's got great songs. It doesn't have that low point, which seems a bit forced.
Yeah.
Maybe. But everything else for it works for me.
Yeah.
The pacing works. The animation is kind of timeless. Not kind of timeless. The animation is timeless.
It's beautiful.
It could come out tomorrow wow, this looks incredible.
Yeah,
you know?
I can see that coming out in the theaters now and
it's just a film to watch and have fun with and enjoy. I think it absolutely holds up without doubt. Maybe more so than any other one that we've reviewed so far. This might be at the top. I mean, it is my favorite Disney animated film, like below Fantasia.
Yeah.
But Fantasia is up there for different reasons.
Mm. Yeah.
This is really up there for me, just because I just think it's a work of art. I really do.
I think out of all the ones that we've reviewed, this one would be one of the first ones I would grab to just throw on.
Yeah.
And I think this is the one, if you put it in front of somebody and you ask them, when was this made? And they didn't know, they might not be able to tell you if this was made a long time ago or if this was something that came out not that long ago.
Yeah, that Blu-ray restoration is really something special. Yeah. It's really something special.
Yeah.
Looks like the animated cells just came off, you know, just were now just photographed a little bit ago.
Yeah.
It's a hell of a job they did with that. So, okay. All right, that was fun.
Yeah,
I like Alice in Wonderland. Hope you guys enjoyed that too. Melissa,
yeah.
Do you have something to read?
I do.
You should really turn off that low battery thing, because, man, that would drive me nuts.
It's not on low battery.
Oh, no? Yeah. Oh, your screen goes dark so quickly all the time.
2 minutes.
That's okay. Read away. We have some reviews. Is that correct?
We have a bunch of reviews.
Read a bunch of reviews.
Okay. Our first one is from DJ Technoid.
Yeah.
Everything Disney and Beyond. Great Disney podcast covering a wide range of topics, just like friends sitting around discussing their love for Disney, because it is friends sitting around discussing their love for Disney. Yes, it is.
Hi.
Acquaintances, maybe.
Shut up, Ray.
I know your names. That's it.
Woohoo! From Ray K. Quote. Random words.
Oh boy.
Nice way to go, Ray.
Well done. Well done. Huzzah.
We have Melatonin98. Also, random words.
Yes.
Nice. And Chelbel25. Random words.
Really? We got three
good
random
job.
Words.
Good
oh
job.
My God. You people are phenomenal.
And then just one last final one. Magically Delicious by Steve Trapani. Love the Disney podcast. They talk about everything from movies to news, I guess that was supposed to be, to trip experiences, and they even talk about buses. All the buses.
They suck.
They're not that bad. They're
end
not that
of
bad.
Review.
If you're looking for a Disney podcast that has a great mix and a great group of folks that love Disney, this is the podcast for you. Thank you all, especially Melissa. Thank you. You all do a great job and keep it up. Love hearing you guys every week. We're glad you listen every week.
Yes.
I think the Magically Delicious thing makes me think of, like, the Lucky Charms, makes me think of drugs, makes me think of Alice in Wonderland.
We are up to 47 five stars on here.
So we need 50.
We need three more.
All right.
Steal a friend's phone.
steal a stranger's phone.
Even better.
What, though, should you put if you were to put a review in the show?
Please tell us.
I was just
oh, perfect. Quote. Please tell us if you put a 5-star review with the review, quote, please tell us. You will get a super shout out as, give me that phone, please. Really? Wow. That was weird.
Sorry, because I backed away from the page.
Oh, you're not on that page anymore. You demon, you.
Sorry.
As Ray K, Melatonin98, and Chell Bell did, guys, these are phenomenal reviews. Because I want someone to find this show, look at the reviews, and go, the hell is going on here?
Please tell us.
So, three words, please tell us. Maybe even put a comma, like, please tell us? If you want.
With a question mark.
Yeah. Think of different ways that you can work those three words with punctuation. Ooh. To make it mean different things. Please tell us? No, that doesn't work, does it?
Please?
Like, exclamation point would be one. Like, please tell us! Another one.
Please!
Like, please tell us. Yeah. Please, ... tell us.
I have a feeling they can be creative art.
Yeah,
guys.
I think you guys can do that. So, please tell us. Those, if any special reviews come up like that, you shall receive magic in the form of magic.
It was good.
Yes. Yep. Yes.
Straightforward. Right now, you are listening to Alice by Pogo. You can find this video and more at youtube.com/Pogo. His music at soundcloud.com/Pogo Mix. And his website is pogomix.net. We are lastgenpodcast.com. Find us on Twitter for the Disney show at DIS Magic Hour Pod. On Facebook, if you search for Disney Magic Hour, you can add yourself to the group and get added to ye groupie.
Groupie?
Silence.
No.
If you head on over to iTunes, and again, if you use the special promo review, please tell us, you will get a super shout out, which I still haven't determined what the hell that means. On the show, head on over to Google Play Music and tell us how that works out.
It's there.
It's there. It's so weird. It's a weird way of getting things, but hey, it's another way of finding. You just got to get into the podcast section and then search for Last Gen Pod. You can search for Disney Magic Hour. If you head on over to SoundCloud, you can listen to all our previous episodes as well. SoundCloud.com/Disney Magic Hour Podcast. And, oh, apologies to anyone who had trouble listening to the show over the weekend or something. SoundCloud basically blew up like a Zeppelin. And the RSS feed for everyone went down. So it was an absolute mess. It took them about 2 days to fix. But it is all up and at them right now. So I thank you for your patience if you had an issue with that. Till next week. What is next week? Peter Pan?
20? No. Yes?
No, I'm not sure. I don't remember. It'll be a mystery. Say goodnight, Brian.
Goodnight, Brian.
Say goodnight, Melissa.
Goodnight, Melissa.
Say goodnight, Scott.
Goodnight, Scott.
Goodnight, Pete. Say goodnight, Bogo.